Hello and welcome to episode 124 of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Scott Kirsten Rennie.
And me, Al Coates. I'm ahead of myself.
Are you Al Coates? Are you sure? You're Al Coates?
I'm not sure today. I'm having somewhat of an exciting life at the moment. Bowled over by the giddy excitement of life, mainly because my 15-year-old has voluntarily put herself forwards for summer school.
What?
Yeah, totally up for it. Totally like, hey, let's do it. Let's do this. And so she literally backflipped out of bed this morning and I took her to school. Yeah, she's a reformed woman. Bless her.
I was going to say, I was with you 10 days ago. That wasn't...
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, horses for courses.
So miracles do happen. So that there you go.
Must be a boy going that she likes.
Oh, well, don't start because it's been like an episode of Neighbours here because we've had, I mean, I shouldn't speak ill of her, but there's been a frisson of emotional turmoil as there's the relationship's been, and we've all been dragged into what is her emotional and love life. And I even had to console her at one point.
Oh, really? Well, I was there when that all kicked off, so it was, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, yeah,
Anyway.
Anyway. Crikey.
We won't talk about that. That's just...
No, how are you?
I'm very busy, very tired, very busy, but all good.
It's fair enough.
Yeah.
It's fair enough.
Whatevs.
The thrust of your life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
whatever. Yeah. Anyway,
all right?
Today we've...
Apart from the emotional
stuff. I'm fine,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Having to console a child.
Oh, I had to, like, I put my arm around her and everything, and she
freaked out.
No, she didn't freak out. She cried. It was a very emotional experience. Oh. I was like, I thought like this, I've read books like Dad for Dabbing for Dummies. And this is what you do when teenage daughter is upset, you offer them physical consolation. Is that something like that? Or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Something like
and I made it say that
well
I was
done.
Her favorite.
Well done, Al.
Yeah. I was, yeah. Thank you.
Parenting 101. Yeah. Again. Well done.
Okay. Anyway, this is a terrible introduction. We have got two guests with us today, and this has been something that we've been really looking forward to doing because I think that for all the podcasts we do, we try and kind of get a really inclusive voice, and so it's really I'm really excited to have two guests here. Today we've got with us Annalise and Shania from Adoptee Futures. So hello.
Hi.
It's wonderful to meet you, and thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate putting up with us two old farts.
Yeah, because you've done it now for about half an hour, so well done, you two. You're still here, so.
Yeah, let us
still here.
A terrible introduction. If I could I ask you to really sort of introduce yourselves, really, and just give us an idea of who you are and what you do. So I'll, in proper Zoom style, I'll actually point at someone and say, "Could you start?" So Anna. Annalise, could you please introduce yourself? Tell us a bit about yourself, who you are, what you are.
Yeah, of course. So I'm Annalisa. I want to say that I'm from Sheffield, but I'm not. I'm actually from London, moved to Milton Keynes, been in Sheffield 11 years. So technically I'm a Sheffielder. This is my home. I'm here. I work in communications and marketing. So I'm actually a communications manager for an infrastructure charity, which supports charities in Sheffield. Love my job. What else about me? Just graduated actually in January. I did a master's in public and political communication, about to apply to do my PhD, which I'm fingers crossed will get in to do.
I've got so many questions.
Can I ask you, before we start.
I need some advice on structuring myself and stuff because it sounds like, so we'll talk later.
Shania, tell us who you are. I mean, if people listen to the podcast, they should know who you are, but if you could reintroduce yourself.
Okay, thank you guys. So my name is Shania. I'm an adult adoptee. I'm also an aspiring clinical psychologist, so I care about everything mental health related. I'm also going into my final year, so I'm about to embark on an empirical piece of research about adopted adults and how being adopted affects their mental health. So yeah, that's me. I'm an adult adoptee. I was adopted at the age of 4. Yeah, that's about it.
Cool.
Could you say that's about it? But that's not just about it, is it?
Can't think of anything else. We forgot about adoption futures.
So tell us how. So you're both here. What I'm interested in, because I've read this a couple of times on social media, is you two met during the pandemic, but not face to face, obviously, because we weren't allowed. So tell us about that and tell us how you met and what it's become.
So
I slid into Shania's DMs. That's how we met. I saw that she was posting on Twitter about adoption, and I'd watched a couple of her videos, and I was like, oh my gosh, you sound amazing. And so this was last year, and I was really interested in developing a campaign around sort of adoption, probably Black adoption for National Adoption Week. My background is obviously in communications, marketing, and campaigns. So I was like, okay, let's develop something. And that was like how we started chatting. And then we just started talking. Then we met on Clubhouse, which obviously was an app that was quite big over sort of Christmas. So that's a social and audio networking app where people kind of set up rooms. And so there were quite a few rooms on adoption. And for me, I found the space really edifying. And a lot of the rooms were kind of led by adoptees talking about their experiences. So I got to know Shania and kind of her background through these audio rooms. Shania, do you want to fill out the rest?
Yeah, so we've actually never met in person, which is crazy.
Oh my God.
Never. yeah, I know. So we kind of met on Twitter. Annalisa, as she said, slid into my DMs. And I think the fact that on Clubhouse, there weren't many adoptees from the UK. So we were kind of both from the UK. And I feel like our bond kind of went on from there. And then we were talking everything adoption. And at the time, I was doing workshops for adoptive parents for an adoption agency. And I think that slowly I started to realize how there was a lack of support. And I was kind of telling Annalisa about this. And then I think that we got like more frustrated and more frustrated. And one day we were like, right, we need to do something. And then that is when Adopted Futures was born.
So you've never met? See, now this no, is like yeah. this because we always think that we're down with the kids, but we've met in real life, and I'm just wondering if this is maybe the way forward. This is the future, you know, for people never to meet in real life and to go and set up a community interest company. I mean, that is like some people listen and go, what? How could that happen?
So I think the difference with Shania and I is that we've got such a great bond, and a lot of our aims with Adoptee Futures, like we chatted through quite a lot, and so kind of figured out that we have similar hopes, but also our experiences of adoption are very different. Obviously there are similarities, but I think that we both have like a cause that we were like, right, we want to solve this. I already run an organization in Sheffield which is dedicated to sort of Black history, heritage and culture, so I've got quite a lot of experience in running events, running workshops, and obviously I work for a charity that helps set other charities up. So I think for me, it just, when I met Shania, obviously virtually, I was like, oh my gosh, like we connect, this is great. Another UK adoptee. And the only other adoptee that I'm close to is my sister. And so for me, it's just been beautiful meeting another adoptee who's like outside of my family experience, and being able to kind of communicate and chat. And yeah. I just love it. Wow.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that we have so many similarities, but we both bring such different aspects to adoptee futures. For example, Annalise is all about kind of like policy and changing things, etc. Annalise has so much experience within talking about racial equity, stuff like that. And for me, I am really interested, like I said, in the mental health aspect of things. So it's crazy, but it just kind of works. Like, we didn't really have a schedule. We didn't say, okay, you do this thing, you do this thing. It just kind of, yeah, it just worked.
Can I ask a question? Because I was thinking about this before we spoke today, and I was trying to think of a comparative organization like Adoptee Futures. And obviously we've got a lot of adoption charities, but they're predominantly focused on, I mean, they do work with adopted individuals, but they're sort of, an awful lot of their work is perhaps by adopted or for adoptive parents. But there's no sort of, you know, there's no one organization that is by adoptees for adoptees. And is that, I mean, does that come as a surprise to you? Or, you know, what are your thoughts on that? And is that, you know, is that why you did it or, you know?
So, no. I mean, well, yes and no. I mean, so for me, there wasn't a surprise. It's not a surprise that there isn't a dedicated organization run by adoptees or even that focuses on adoptees. And I think for me, that's where Adoptee Futures fits in. And that's like, there's a massive space there and it's a gap. And that's what we want to fill. I think that, like, obviously we're talking about this, and I think that we have to give absolute credit to Pam Hodgkins, who obviously ran NORCAP. So she was doing a lot of work prior to us. So I really just want to shout her out because, you know, we, at the end of the day, we all stand on legends. So Pam obviously was doing the work in that space prior. And I think for us, like, as you said, there isn't any organization at the minute who are kind of focused on what we're focusing on, which is on adopted people. And so I think it's quite special what we're doing. And I think that it works in the sense that we're both adoptees, and our experiences, they're very different, but there are similarities. And so I think for us to run an organization that is focused on adoptees, also focused on helping, adoptive parents as well. I will actually say this, but we had an email from, and I won't name names, but we had an email from somebody who works for an adoption agency. And she said that she was going to book onto one of our workshops because, and she's not doing it to spy, but because she's an adoptive parent and they don't currently, where she works, have workshops for that are sort of adoptee focused in the sense that run by adoptees. And so for me, that was like, wow, okay, if somebody's coming from an adoption agency and saying this to us, like, that's incredible. So it's been really edifying and also like validating as well that what we're doing, there is a gap in the market for it.
I was thinking as well, because there's such a spectrum of voices and perspectives on adoption from all, regardless of where you sit in the triangle, square, whatever. But is that a challenge? There is such a spectrum of people who would say that they are vehemently opposed to all forms of adoption and it's an offense to them. To other people who are indifferent, you know, see it as a wholly positive experience and they're, you know, hugely grateful, and lots of people in between, and lots of people who move up and down that kind of spectrum. So have you got a position on, are you trying to sort of inhabit a position, or are you more of a platform for all voices?
So individually, we've obviously got different positions. As Adoptee Futures, I would say, and I feel like Shania will echo this, is that we are a platform that facilitates other people's voices. So we do obviously have our own position as Adoptee Futures, and for that it is that we're centered on adopted people. So that is our focus and that is our framework. And for me, it's also the framework of racial equity, because we forget that obviously as adoption intersects with race quite a lot, and it also intersects with various different systems, so like poverty and inequality, and all of that is kind of embedded in work that we're doing. So even though individually we might have different perspectives on adoption, together as Adoptee Futures, yeah, I'd say that we facilitate a platform.
Well, thank you. That's
And I think also, I think when we're saying that, you know, we centre adoptees, this doesn't mean that we only cater to adoptees. I think that centering adoptees also means giving workshops to adoptive parents, for example, because there are things that adoptive parents need to know from our perspective that their children might go through. These things are crucial for them to know, and this will in turn help the adoptee. Also, for example, we provide information to people who have no connection to adoption, apart from maybe their parent might be adopted or their friends might be adopting. So all of this kind of support, all of this raising awareness will trickle down to the adoptee to give them the support that they need and for them to be able to embark on their healing journey.
Thank you.
I was going to say, you mentioned Pam there, and I mean, NORCAP was for anybody that doesn't know who's listening, nobody listens to this. NORCAP was more of a kind of how am I trying to describe it now? It was it came from a time where people needed to access files, which of course still happens, but it's in a different way, isn't it? So it was more that, and I know that they worked with the founders of Adoption UK as well, because Pam's actually shared that with us. So in that respect, do you feel like you're catching up on a good few years? Because adoption has changed so much since NORCAP was around, and I know that's moved into different organisations over the time that it's been, since it was founded. Do you feel like you're catching up on so many years that have been missed in terms of the adoptee perspective? Or do you just feel like, okay, so this is where we start from. I'm looking at you both and assuming what Al and I call the Children Act generation. Sorry, I know that sounds quite harsh, but it's kind of from the place of where our own children come from, because you look a similar age to my own children, I'm not going to lie. You look mid-20s, early 20s. There you go, I said it. If that's a compliment, good. If it's an insult, sorry. all right, okay.
I'll take it as a compliment.
But that's a very different generation to the... I heard it the other day again. I stupidly watched Long Lost Family the other day, and those words put up for adoption were mentioned, and I was just like, oh, you know. So do you think there's a way to go, or do you think that you're just going to start from the here and now?
So I feel that there is still a long way to go. I think that conversations, so a lot of my work is focused around race and heritage. So if I keep mentioning it, it's just because that's what my work is around. So like conversations around race, for example, and racial identity, I know for a fact that those conversations only have really started to happen because of obviously the protests that happened last summer and all the calls for becoming anti-racist and all the work that different agencies are doing at the moment around that. So I do know that obviously there's still quite a way to go in that regard. And so I think that what we bring is that aspect. And I think that also the fact that I think it's a bit of both. So I think even though we are in some sense catching up on all those voices, I mean, those voices, adoptee voices, adoption, and like, I know that there might be arguments for and against and people saying that, no, but those voices are centered in my perspective. And I get really annoyed each National Adoption Week, because, and I think for me, that's where the premise of Adoptee Futures came from, because for me, it was just really striking how adult adoptees voices are really missed out of that campaign. And so, for me, that's where, yes, there are changes, but I would love to see those changes around National Adoption Week, which I know is a recruitment drive. So I know that like you know, in essence, maybe it's not the right time. But I think if we're going to call something National Adoption Week, then let's focus on all the voices of adoption, not just the voices that fit a particular perspective or fit a particular marketing drive. And so I think that's where we kind of fit in and our aims of what we're trying to do. And it is about working with all sides of adoption. So the agencies, adopted people, adopted parents. It's not just, oh, we're focusing on this aspect or this perspective. It is about sort of a holistic way of thinking.
No, that's really cool, because I think that's what we want, what we need. You know, we need that kind of collaboration, if you like, you know, because we support birth parents. Beyond 25, adoptees, if you can get support, fair enough, but if you can't, then, you know, it's like, not who cares, but that is almost how it comes across, isn't it? Because it's up to the age of 25, if you've got an EHCP these days, you're fine, but beyond 25, there is nothing, there's no paid for services to support adoptees, and everybody's at a different position when they're at 25, 30, 35, 40. So yeah, good.
So is that part of your I mean, I guess it's early days yet, isn't it? So I'm, you know, and you're in some ways you're finding your feet. But is that an issue that you'd also like to look at and campaign in relation to the lack of support or the sort of the peculiar legislation around who can provide support to adoptees as opposed to any general member of the public?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm currently working towards becoming a clinical psychologist. And I think that I personally, I think Annalisa also believes that all adoptees should have free mental health support. Adoptees go through a developmental trauma, and this affects so many different aspects of their life. So when they're children, this can affect sensory development, it can lead to dissociation, attachment development, which affects how they are as adults. Emotional regulation, the concept of themselves and identity, etc. So I truly believe that adoptees need to have therapy, not just with people that can understand, but with people who can relate to them, with people that understand the trauma that they've gone through. And the fact that mental health support stops at such an early age is ridiculous. Like, I'm not sure who thought about that, because if you think about it, many adoptees are having access to their records at what, 18. Adoptees are moving out from home at this point. I always say that healing comes first with understanding. It can take so long for an adoptee to come out of the fog. So for someone to, for example, go through all of this, move out, find themselves by themselves, come out of the fog at whatever age this is, there are people who don't find out that they're adopted until so late in their life. And then to have to go through all of these emotions with no mental health support is just crazy. I think that it's good that there is support for children who are adopted, but in order to fully heal, I think that there needs to be much more support for adults. So yeah, from my perspective, I want to work with adopted adults when I qualify. So yeah, that is the goal, and I think that it's
that's really
so
interesting, because we've had a few people come onto the conversations who up until they were mid-30s didn't know they were adopted, and they're only, we had a guy recently, he was 29, and he's now in his mid-30s. He found out he was adopted when he was 29, and I mean, that's horrendous. Just a quick thing though, this has really interested me, because you mentioned that word fog, and I think that it would be really nice if you could define what fog means, because I think that it's used quite regularly in terms of a phrase on social media. I read it a lot. The same with gaslighting, and there's all these words that, like, I'm not being funny, I'm 44, I don't know what they mean. That's the first thing. But the second thing is a definition. So what in your minds is the fog? What is it that the fog means to you, or just generally?
So to me, I guess the way that I see it is when you're a child, and whether you're adopted or not, you view the world through your parents' eyes, through the people that are raising you. So I think that many adoptees, when they're kind of young, especially because of the narrative, we kind of are told that adoption is beautiful, that we should be grateful. So I think that all of these things that we're told create a fog around us, so we're not actually able to see what's in front of us. And then as we kind of grow, there might be different things that affect us, which cause this fog to clear. And then when we say we're coming out of the fog, it's kind of like us walking through a path and seeing how adoption has affected us with more clarity.
Okay. Yeah, I'd agree as well. I think from my perspective, I mean, I didn't know I was in the fog until probably I was like 29. And I remember this conversation really vividly. I was on a train. I used to work in Doncaster, and I was on a train back. And I was chatting to my mum on the phone, and we got into a big discussion on adoption, because I was saying about how, and my views may or may not have changed since then, so I'm just putting that as a disclaimer. I was saying about how adopted children are always the last, are always chosen as a last resort. There's not, most people don't necessarily choose to adopt unless they've experienced fertility issues. And my mum and I were having this massive argument, and she was quite upset by it, and took what I was saying quite to heart, really, because she couldn't have children and that's why she adopted. And so that was the conversation that kind of really started my awareness, actually, into kind of being adopted, because I grew up kind of always safe that I was adopted. I never really questioned it. I wasn't necessarily bothered about finding my birth parents. It wasn't an issue to me. And so the more I started kind of thinking about adoption and how that affected me throughout my life, and then the more that I started to connect with other adoptees, especially social media, like, help facilitate this, I was like, wow, okay, like, you've experienced that as well, like, so have I. And so I went on a bit of a journey, and I've just had to just flicked up something on my screen, because I found what the term meant, coming out of the fog. And like, there doesn't seem to be any real what's the word, definition, but it was put forward by two academics in a book called Emotional Blackmail, and they use it as an acronym, and it's called Fear, Obligation and Guilt. And it's meant to describe the experience of being with an emotional abuser. And I think for me, like, that resonates so strongly, because I think many of the experiences, and obviously this is not, I don't want to be generic across the board, but I think from what I've kind of chatted to other adoptees, we experience those feelings. So the fear, the obligation, and the guilt, and the whole kind of adoption is good narrative, which is kind of enforced through society, but obviously has massive effects in our psyche and kind of the consequences that we have from it. And so I think for me, like, going on kind of a bit of a journey over this, I'm 30, 34 coming up.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I put you like in your mid-20s.
Oh, okay. I know, that's why I said I'll take it as
I'm
a compliment.
I'm only 25, I promise.
But I'm 34.
Sorry.
soon. And I was like, no. And so I've been on a massive journey kind of internally, I guess, on being on two sides, because at one point I was like, adoption abolition, and I was fighting the cause for that. And then on the other extreme, I've been like, no, I want to adopt myself, and kind of adoption's great and adoption's good. So I've gone through all the different aspects, and I think it's really important that we point out that your views can change over time, and it doesn't mean that they're wrong or not, you know. And I always, what I used to say to my mum's actually, she passed away not so long ago, but I'd always say to her, because our views were very different and we used to discuss a lot, and she and so, and I guess part of the work that I'm doing with Adoptee Futures is because of the relationship that I had with my mum. And I think that I really want I'm getting a bit emotional, but I guess I really want other adoptive parents to kind of understand and see how adoptees can, how it can affect us. And it's not that we're talking in binary tones. So I feel like sometimes we make these things binary. So it's got to be good and it's got to be bad. But actually, you can hold two truths. So your truth as an adopter is the same as my truth as an adoptee. They can be held in perfect kind of alignment with each other. It doesn't mean that I don't love you because I don't necessarily agree with your views and vice versa. And so I think that that for me is kind of the relationship I had with my mom is kind of the way that I kind of describe coming out of the fog, which sounds really bizarre, but it's just because me and her had lots of discussions around this and we were two opposing views. And so if anything, like the work that I do with Adoptee Futures is really as a result of the relationship I had with my mom. I just, all I wanted her to do was understand me. That's all. And so I think that if the work that we can do by providing our workshops and kind of speaking about the adoptee experience, but also uplifting other adoptees, if that can help another adoptee or if that can help an adoptive parent, then like our work is
your
done.
Your work will never be done. I can promise you that. You've got a long, road in front of you. Many years of doing this, I'm afraid, I think.
I'm really intrigued by the, I watch social media and I don't always get involved, but I often see that battle lines are drawn at times between the two binary positions. You know, adoption is bad, adoption is good, you know, and different people sit in those camps and for different reasons. And, you know, it's a nonsensical argument to have on Twitter. Come on. You know, and who has ever, who's ever changed their mind through a Twitter argument? You know, but I kind of, there's times when I felt slightly uncomfortable about where fog has been used almost as an insult. So I've heard adoptees say to other adoptees who've got a different view and say, "Oh, well, you're in the fog," and I go, "Oh, that's tricky," because in some ways it is about how we all change as we go older. We know, obviously, I don't want to say everyone thinks that, but as humans, we change, and we hopefully our views change, and so that's where I'm kind of slightly nervous. But around, and not nervous is maybe the wrong word, but I just see that sometimes as adopters, and speaking to a lot of adopters, they feel really threatened by that. So it's good to hear someone like yourselves talk about it in terms that make sense, and it's not because I think a lot of adopters, after the initial flurry of, you know, insecurity and, you know, keeping my little bundle of joys, got to keep them close. Hopefully, as adopters get older, they kind of go, actually, there's a bigger picture. Yeah. And
And I think that's something that I'm realizing with my dad actually at the minute, because my parents have always been quite, I hate using the word always, but my parents have been quite fragile as adopters. And my sister and I mean, if you speak to my sister, she would have a completely different perspective on adoption than I do, even though we've been brought up in the same family, when we don't have the same birth parents. But my sister's got a completely different experience. And so what I've really noticed is since my mum passed in June, and since then, my dad and I have had really great conversations about adoption. And he said to me, like, there's so many things that, like, that they're a lot wiser now. And there's a lot of things that, like there's just things like he's encouraging me to get in touch with my biological family, which if he would, like, I mean, they wouldn't have done that before, you know, even though, like, they've both said to me, you know, we're here to support you if you want to find them. But I've always felt, is that true though? Because it doesn't feel like it. But my dad is like really actively encouraging me. And so the conversations we've had have been really, really beautiful since my mum passed, which again is just really interesting. But I think my dad has definitely realised, I think, that actually there are some things that maybe they could have done better on, or not said better on, or had more advice on. And so, like my dad has said, that there are so many things he would have done differently as well. So, I do echo that. I think that potentially, like, possibly when you adopt your children are a bit older, then maybe you start to change.
It is a thing, because I mean, I'm listening to you now. It's just, I'm kind of flicking into my parenting brain and going, okay, have I been like that? You know, we've got contact at the minute, and I'm the same as your dad. I'm encouraging it. I have done from the age of 17, but it's still, It's one of those things that when I think back to 2006-07, when I sat in that prep course and we were going, you know, that child might turn around and say, "You're not my dad." And I remember going, "Oh!" But actually, when it has happened, I've been like, "No, I'm really not, but I'm here for you right now," you know, that kind of way. So it's like, I think I surprised myself. So in some ways, some of the preparation, not all of it, because it can't cover everything. It should, but it can't. You'd be there for 20 years trying to cover everything. But, you know, some of it is quite useful in that respect when you reflect back on it as well. So I think that's, you know, seriously, thank you for sharing that. I think that was really interesting.
Yeah. I think the adopters need support into adulthood, because I think that there's a focus on these little bundles of joy you're going to get, and the developmental milestones, you know, adolescence. Well, there's not very much of an emphasis on that, but it's anticipated that will be you will need to relearn, you'll need to develop, you'll need to. But then adulthood, you know, my eldest daughter's 28, and we've had a really interesting conversation around contact, because actually they are in contact and have been for quite a while, but. And my wife and I were very like, go and do it. You know, if you want to do it, go and do it. But it sort of dawned on me through talking to an adoptee that she may want to do it, but she may feel disloyal. And there's nothing we can say to stop her feeling disloyal, because her nature is to be loyal. And you kind of go, oh, that's a really complicated picture. But actually, someone like yourselves, who've walked that path to just kind of say, chill the hell out, or have you said this? Have this conversation can be really helpful. Yeah. So you've got some plans, haven't you? That was a nice segue.
I was just going to segue into that as well. I tell you, we're on the same level, our Colts.
Boom.
I was just going to say to Shania there, actually, what are, because you've got some events coming up, haven't you?
Yeah, so it's interesting what you're saying about, you know, kind of what you guys have experienced as adoptive parents, because these are the things that I think are crucial that people should know before they're adopting. We actually have some workshops coming up for adoptive parents, and they run from the 12th to the 14th of October. So we have three that are coming up. The first one is called So You Want to Adopt. So this is for people who are kind of thinking about adopting, but who are not quite sure what it entails. So we kind of touch on what adoption is, why it happens, the trauma behind it, the logistics and the adoption process. We also include exercises in it as to whether you are ready to adopt, and we also include perspectives from adoptees, so what adoptees wish you knew about adoption. The second workshop we have is the So You've Decided to Adopt workshop. So this is for people who have embarked on their journey to adopt. And this kind of includes, again, you know, education around adoption and why it happens, education around the trauma, but it touches on stuff like contact with birth families, about the fact that adopted children can keep two families in mind. And also it touches on self-care and as an adoptive parent, generational trauma, and how the trauma that the adoptive parent might have gone through can then trickle down into the adoptee. The final workshop that we have is the So You've Adopted What Next workshop. And I think that this one is very important, because I think that people often see adoption as the end of the journey, but it's really, we think it's really just the start. So again, we'll touch on the trauma, we'll touch on the perspective from adoptees, but also something in that workshop that I think is quite crucial is supporting your child's healing. So I know that you kind of touched on feeling worried about, have I done this, have I done that, etc. And so we touched on the fact that, you know, adoption is a trauma, but it's a trauma that hasn't been caused by adoptive parents. So it can't be healed by adoptive parents. It's something that the adoptee has to walk through, and they have to make that journey by themselves, but adoptive parents can guide them through that. So we talk about that. We talk about how to give your child control over their story. And we also talk about transracial adoption and how to keep the child's culture alive.
Oh, that's really interesting, actually. One of those is my birthday, so thank you for choosing that date. it's really interesting that you've chosen those three things, and I think I assume over time you're going to develop these into like a little bit more. So I'm thinking from my own perspective, obviously LGBTQI plus adoption, you know, my kids probably I'm not sure how they would kind of they may need support with that in the future, you know, that might become a thing for them. It's not at the minute, but it could become a thing, you know. And all the kind of alternatives, you know, single or solo adopters as well, you know, it's a kind of a and I love the so you've adopted one, because sometimes it's just nice to hear those messages, but also if you are struggling, there may be a solution in one of those workshops, I'm assuming, you know. It might just be a simple thing, but you know.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that, like you're saying, I think that people, when they're adopting, I know that my parents, when they were adopting, didn't kind of get the full picture. So I feel like these workshops will provide reassurance as well as education. All of them are slightly interactive, so obviously they include what I've mentioned, but they include other things as well. So they're slightly interactive, they kind of get you thinking. So yeah, we think that they provide a well-rounded opinion on adoption.
And I think for as an adoptive parent, I'm really conscious that, but I think it's true for any parents, that how well can you ever know your children? And adoption is like another layer of a barrier to that. I think there's an enormous amount of curiosity in parents' minds about the inner workings of their children generally, but especially for children who have been adopted. I think there's this temptation for children to just say the right thing. So I think the opportunity to speak to adult adopted individuals is fantastic, because I know that from, you know, the podcast that we've done, I've taken so much from that, because even just things like, this isn't your story, you know, your daughter might just be feeling loyal, you know, it's like a huge therapy session, the podcast, isn't it really, Scott?
It can be.
So I think they'd be fantastic. Can I ask you how much they are? I presume people should be paying for you for these things.
Well, they should be, of course. Yeah.
It should be. Go on then.
Yeah, of course. Definitely. I'm like, so the workshops are £25 each. And you can go onto our website and book. It's very exciting. When we got our first booking, Shania and I were very excited, because we literally just put up the booking and we got the first booking within 5 minutes, which was like, oh my gosh! We both rang each other, like screaming down the phone.
We've been there. We have been there, believe us. Yeah. We're like, and they keep coming.
That's wonderful.
Head across to our website.
And we also, so our website is www.adoptivefutures.org, but we also offer one-to-one consulting, so for anyone who's kind of looking for a more personal approach, they can go through that. We also offer coaching. Those are all the services for individuals, and then for organizations we do talks. We offer curated panel events specifically to what the organization wants, and we also offer consulting and coaching to organizations.
Can I ask as well, if adopted adults want to kind of like a link into you, are you offering like for opportunities to come together, however that is, digitally, technically as well? Is that something you're, how would people get involved, and what is there for them if they're adopted?
So our plans, and if you know anyone who wants to fund us, let us know.
We'll be fighting over that funding, believe us.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. But yeah, our plans are to create support groups for adopted adults. Obviously, our capacity at the moment is we're focusing on sort of doing the workshops. But long-term plans, yeah, we definitely want to have support groups for adoptees, but that all relies on funding. And to be quite frank with you, I really do think that adoption agencies should work with us to provide these support groups. So if there's any adoption agencies listening...
Do you know, it's funny you say that, because we know a number of leads of the regional adoption agencies who do listen. And there's a couple that just sprung into my mind there, and I was tempted to say their names just to shame them into contacting me. I won't do that, but I know that if they will listen, and I guarantee you will hear from some of them, which I think, you know, I think the regionalization process has really changed things, because I think that we've noticed it as well. Whether whether you've had a fantastic experience or whether it's been mediocre or whether it's not changed, actually there are some major improvements through regionalization. And I think that the voices of adopted people, adoptive parents and birth parents have really been amplified over that process as well. But it's about finding out the best way to do it. And I think that's sometimes the issue, because, you know, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with an 18-year-old who is able to stand and talk in front of a prep group. That's amazing that an 18-year-old can do that, but actually there's way more than just that 15-30 minute chat. It needs to be a little bit more than that. And I know that there'll be RAs listening who will definitely want to kind of take you up on that.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, my slight discomfort with that sort of thing is that their adoptive mams put them forwards to the agency and gave them a lift to the prep group. So
But that's no different to some of the adopters who talk as well, because the adopters sometimes who talk are quite new to it as well. So they're within the first 18 months of having a child placed with them. So it's still a little bit less intense than, say, you know, me and you. You've been doing it since the year 1850, haven't you? And I've been doing it since 2007. So, you know, like, my story would be very different if I was to stand in front of a prep group now than it would have been when I did it in 2009, 2010. Mm. So, you know, it's the same thing, really, isn't it, I think?
I'll say. The other thing I was thinking as well, I mean, this is, I feel like I'm starting to slip into being an agent here. like, I've got this idea. We could do this thing. You could do this thing. And what about media? Because I think the media, again, we hear curated voices coming through the media. You know, that if there's for example, National Adoption Week, they'll instinctively go to Adoption UK or PAC or whoever, Quorum, who will then sort of wheel out. I'm being really careful, but can we say approved adoptees, or dare I say vetted adoptees? I don't know. Right, yeah, I've said it, and that to me, you're struck off everyone's Christmas card list again. But for organisations to go and say, actually, this is a group of adoptees run by adoptees, there's no vetting. This is, they will speak with independence and be reasonable. They're their own
voice as well. You are your own voice, aren't you? That you can select what suits. So if it was, you know, if it was something to do around ethnicity or LGBT, or, you know, you could actually say, well, we've got people to do this. So surely that would be, I think that's a fab idea. I like that idea.
So it's really tricky, because this is something I explored last year, and I approached a national magazine, a national newspaper, with a pitch. They replied back to me and they were like, we're not so keen on this, but we'd like to hear your personal story. And I was a bit like, no, because that's not what I want to get across. And so it didn't happen. But what then transpired was they'd actually created a partnership with an organization. And so my pitch was actually complete opposite to the partnership that they had created. Therefore, my voice wasn't out there because they created this partnership. And so I actually think it's really difficult for adoptees whose voices don't fit that top line of what they're wanting for National Adoption Week. Like, we can't, like, National Adoption Week is a recruitment week. It's a drive for adopters. And so obviously voices that are opposite to that are never going to get through. So the only way that for us to be able to pitch during that time would be to, like, talk about the brilliance of adoption and all the good side of it. And that's not really what I want to talk about. You know, and so I think that, for me, it's about, I want to see system change. I want to see change. I don't want to see the same repetitive drawl that we see in the media. And actually, this is something that my PhD, so I'm currently applying to do a PhD, and I am looking at sort of the narratives within the media, but the narratives, particularly around sort of the voices on social media and how the stories of adoptees can kind of reclaim back that narrative, because there's not actually been that much research on it. And so I'm really keen on sort of the different types of adoption narratives, and particularly like the narrative of adoption is beautiful, the not so dominant narrative of adoption is trauma. And so I think it's really difficult to get those kind of stories that aren't kind of the pro-positive language in the media, unless you were to kind of round that off with some type of adoption's great aspect. But I do want to give credit, because there is a magazine that I wrote for a couple of years ago called Black Ballad, and they are doing some incredible work around Black women, the voices of Black women, and highlighting Black women's stories. And I have written, I wrote an article for them, which was on why adult adoptee voices need to be heard. And so the fact that there is a platform for Black women to be able to talk about their stories, and it not necessarily fit kind of the popular line of, you know, adoption in that sense, that was great. And that article did come out during National Adoption Week. So yeah, for me, I would love to see more stories in the media and more narratives in the media that was kind of more adoptee focused, and less sort of about let's get everyone to adopt.
I don't know about Al, but you know, we've been involved in National Adoption Week for a few years now, and as things progress through, for me anyway, I don't know about Al, I cannot speak for Al, I never would speak for Al, I wouldn't speak for anybody, to be fair. And in 2006, I was nominated for an award.
16.
Which I won. 2016, sorry, not 2006. Jeepers creepers. I was still in school in 2006. And I won. And I was delighted, blah, blah, blah. But as time has gone on, I could see the premise behind it. I can see the, you know, and you know, we don't celebrate enough the young people and teenagers who have been adopted, who may not live with their adopted parents anymore, because you know that has, it's just not worked out, and they've had to move into back into foster care or residential care or something like that. And I just think that the whole kind of recruitment thing needs, they've always struggled. They always will struggle. It flips. You know, one minute we've got too many adoptive parents approved that have no and there's less children. And then it just kind of, someone adds a little bit of weight on and it flips itself. So I think for me, you're absolutely spot on with that. National Adoption Week needs to be either National Adopters Week or National Adoptees Week, or, you know, however you kind of represent yourselves. Yeah. Because I think that it's a very different perspective on all cases. So,
I've never realized this. Sorry, Shanae. I'll just say this. I'd never realized this, though. I had always thought that National Adoption Week was like celebrating all aspects of adoption. And so it wasn't, and I guess it was until, you know, I started really looking into it and what it was about, that actually I was like, wait, that doesn't, you know, really celebrate or uplift all experiences of adoption. And I think for me, my concern with National Adoption Week and kind of the whole recruitment drive push, I was reading the stats the other day, and there's like 3,000 I think that was like 3,000 Black children in care or waiting for adoption or something like that. Sorry, I should know the stats off by heart because I was reading this over and over again. But only 8% of those 8% of those were Black children. And I was just like, that's shocking. Like, the stats are absolutely shocking. And I was thinking, but why are we recruiting? Why is there this drive for recruiting adopters when actually we really should be looking at why those kids are in care in the first place, why there's overwhelming stats on Black children in care. Like, why are we not looking at that? And then why are we not looking at support for that? And so I guess that's where my perspective really lies. It's less about let's get everyone to adopt and more about the causes and the support of why, of how we can kind of stop so many kids going into care. And I think I say this quite often, but I see adoption as a plaster wound. I think all it does is kind of bandage over a wound, but it doesn't actually solve the systemic issues. And that's what I want to see take place. So when I see like all this recruitment stuff going on for National Adoption Week, it just confuses me because I'm like, why are we doing this? Like, why are we not looking at the system, the faults that are within the system that removes all these children? Why are we not trying to put support in place for the birth family? I have massive issues over National Adoption Week.
I think Al and I would agree with that, because I think that, you know, the kind of prevention from a family getting to that point where, you know, the children are removed and then, you know, they go into the foster care system, that bit maybe might suit the needs of that family at that point, so the family can get that help and support. But actually it's that bit after that, isn't it? You know, that's a really key part, because actually there are more than we think that actually are returned to birth family, which is, you know, really good news, and they're really supported. But there's still too many that aren't, I guess. I was just going to say the last thing I was going to say, Al and I, you know, we will never breathe the words hashtag you can adopt. Oh, I've just said it, because it just doesn't feel right to us. So anyway, that's it. But Naya, just before we wrap up, you're going to be one of our amazingly fabulous guest speakers at our conference in November, aren't you?
Yeah. Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you guys for having me.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming.
I was just going to say, this isn't a sales pitch. I feel bad for mentioning that, actually, but I just wanted to acknowledge the fact that you have agreed to come and do that with the other the other participants, shall we say, because this year we have tried, you know, we kind of want to hear from adopted adults, and you know, any platform will do to be able to do that, I guess. So we're going to be talking more about identity and stuff. Have you thought about what you might talk about, or have you kind of just not thought about it yet because you've been too busy?
Yeah, do you know what? I've thought about a lot of things recently. What I've been thinking about in terms of adoption is being queer and adopted. I think that is one thing that isn't really thought about. I think that with adopters, we often, you know, that's kind of recognised that there are a lot of queer adoptive parents, but there are so many queer adoptees. I put out a tweet the other day. It was just a ramble, really, about how I was thinking about how being adopted kind of affected. I thought I was straight for the longest time, and I was thinking, wow, my adoption actually really affected this. So I just put out a tweet saying that, and we've got so many responses of people who had gone through similar things, different things to do with their queerness and being adopted. We're currently running a series called... it's like the Queer and Adopted series. So there are lots of, if you go on our blog, there are a guest blog each week about people talking about their experience. But yeah, that's one of the things to do with identity and adoption that I've been thinking about. And I think that awareness needs to be brought to it, definitely.
So can I ask you a question? Because as a gay man, you use the word queer. To me, that's an offensive term. So, yeah.
How is that?
I think it's my age. I'm 44. I'm not a young person. So, is that how people identify, or is it just a term that, you know, is kind of...
Yeah, so...
I'm just interested. I'm not offended by you saying it. I'm just saying that to me, that's like... You know, in the 80s, growing up, if someone was to use that word, it was a trigger, if that makes sense. So I'm really interested.
Yeah, fair enough.
No, I'm interested.
Yeah, so I guess I guess people describe themselves how they feel best, but I think the word queer particularly, the way I see it is that we've kind of reclaimed it. So I prefer to kind of identify as queer. I am bisexual, but I prefer to identify as queer. It kind of gives me the also the kind of privacy, so that I'm not, if I'm in a situation where I don't want to say too much but I want to express it, for me that is the perfect word. Other people might describe themselves by their sexuality, but also I think that in my opinion the word queer encompasses everything. So gender expression, sexuality, and everything in between. It kind of instead of, you know, LGBTQIA+, I think it's also it's also easier to say. And yeah, it kind of encompasses everything. So I really do feel like the word has been reclaimed, and it feels, to me, it feels powerful. So yeah, it's interesting that there's such a difference there.
All of its own, to be fair, because I know
definitely.
Dan, who I'm still very much in touch with, he's a young, I don't know how he identifies his sexuality. I'll call him gay because that's what I would refer to him. And he's like, you're an old man. We need to do a podcast on the differences between you being gay in the 80s and me being gay in the 90s. So it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Me, yes. 1980s, 70s. Al. Thank you very much. Shut up. So it is fascinating. And I'm not offended by you saying it. What I'm saying is, like, in the 80s, that was an offensive term. So I feel like me and you need to have a proper chat and do a separate podcast.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. Definitely.
So that's in November. Tickets are on sale on our website, noborderstraining.org. It is going to be we've got more than just Shania, which I'm not dissing Shania's input into it, but we have got other adult adoptees, and there's some amazing speakers, so go to the website and check that out. Annalisa, Shania, thank you so much, because it's just been an enlightening night, and I honestly, genuinely wish you all the success with Adoptee Futures, because I think it's going to be absolutely fabulous, and it is just needed, so thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for not calling you Annalisa at the beginning and just getting tongue-tied.
Fine. My dad calls me Annalise. My mum used to call me Annalisa, and obviously my name is spelled Annalisa, and that's how I call myself. So I always just say to my mum, well, why did you name me Annalisa, if you actually want it pronounced as Annalisa. And I never understood why my dad would then call me Annalise. So yeah, I'm just used to people. I get it shortened all the time, or people say Annalise, and I'm like, it's not even Annalise. Where did you get that from? But my nieces don't they don't call me Auntie Annalisa. They always are like, Auntie Lisa. Yeah. They drop the Anna completely and just go straight to Lisa. So I'm used to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Have you stopped
recording? Thank you so much. No, I haven't yet. That was I have to have my apology on because of my amazing faux pas. Anyway, goodbye everyone.
So you're making out that you're so you're making out that you recognize that, even though it was me that texted you and went, Annalisa.
I knew I'd
not
got
Annalise,
it.
You
can
fool.
We just end the podcast, please? Let's have our fights in private.
Okay. Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.